Please rise. Our stand-in for the Community Development Director will now lead us in the pledge to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We'll now sing the national anthem. Seriously.
So crazy.
With no.
What happened to our clerk? Is he back here or what's
he's invisible.
Are you okay now?
Or? Good.
Okay, well then you should probably take the roll call.
Councilmember Watson.
Present.
Councilmember Hansen.
Here.
Councilmember Olson.
Here.
Councilmember Ingram.
Here.
Councilmember Mutzler.
Here.
Councilmember Birch.
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Here.
Great. All present account for. So next up is the public comment period. This is the time in the agenda where you can come forward and speak to the council on anything that's not on tonight's agenda. And everyone not wearing a blue shirt is allowed to speak tonight. It's a new rule. So anyone like to speak tonight that's not wearing a blue shirt? Okay, good. Well, let's move on. All right, fine. People with blue shirts can speak.
But we give him a year-long excuse.
You left out of this stuff I'm going to give you here. Papa John Robinson, 6072, Malloy House. What? What? Okay. First thing I want to award you, Mayor, is I got a couple things to give you again, is being big honcho.
So?
I don't know if you know anybody with a smart car, but if you do, you should find one, because I found the perfect, what do you call the thing where you put the oil into the engine? The oil.
You know where the dipstick goes?
Yeah, not the dipstick, but you put the oil into it.
Don't funnel,
thank you.
Dipstick.
He's very smart. I'm going to address this issue too later. But here, I'll hear this is a funnel for a smart car.
Okay.
And then, secondly, you guys need to know, all of you, you got to pay attention because I'm sure, like kids in a car, when you're on a trip, you keep asking yourself, or they ask, are we having fun yet? That's perfect. Perfect. I hadn't thought about that. And, you know, and so I'm sure you all are asking yourself at times, are we having fun yet? And so the person that should be responsible for that is sitting right here looking natural. And so I wanted to give him a button he could wear that is a fun meter. Right now it's all the way over on max, but he can put it down to minimum or in between. Now, if you don't pay attention to this, I have one last item that relates to this that I talked to the chief about already. So he knows that I'm going to urge you then, if they won't pay attention to the button, that you should whip out your 357, which I'm going to. Here we go. So just be warned, if you don't pay attention to the meter, the mayor's going to have a 357 available.
Thank you.
Certainly. You've got to wear the button, you know, and carry the 357 in your pocket.
Don't put a hole in your tie, though.
No, this has another plumbing company on it.
Yeah, but that's from Idaho. That's from Idaho. This is an import.
Well, I
see it. Idaho. My son sent it to me.
Know where it's been.
All right. Anyone else? Okay. Normally we move on to the consent agenda where, you know, the council very good is discusses things and decides to speed up the agenda. I don't know what happened. I guess I wasn't at committees and you guys just all went totally out of control and didn't do anything. So we're pulling the resolution on local government investment pool prospects and we're pulling the... Councilperson Birch was the radical that did that. And then they decided the other side of the room was totally out of control. So Councilperson Goodrich pulled the resolution port grant funding application for State Land and Water Conservation Fund. So Councilperson Birch, it's your floor.
I move to the rest of the...
Are you
sure? The rest of the consent agenda that has not been pulled to be left on the consent agenda and to be approved.
Good move.
I second.
Okay, good. Moving second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, Councilperson Burse, it is your floor.
All right, I was sort of reading through the prospectus, which I did not have on Wednesday when we were discussing the local government investment pool. And the way I see it is Ferndale has no surplus funds. We're already looking for money for the budget this year. We're already lost the jail credits and the fire district increase that went from 3% to 11%. And I'm just wondering, where does the state get its assets to fund the fund? The management fee right now is at 0.87%. So essentially we're looking at a money market account. And there's lots and lots of risks right there. It's not insured through the FDIC. Everybody's a genius in a bull market, so I'm not sure this is the right fit for us right now. If you look on page 27, you'll see the accrued net yield over 10 years was less than 2%, and our upfront cost is 1%, so that we're looking at less than 1% yield. And I just don't see where we have the money to contribute to this fund.
Finance Director, would you care to respond, please?
I certainly would agree with you and counsel that the interest rate is very, very low. It's about 0.10 annual percentage. It's not even 1%. It's 1/10 of 1% is our, and we typically get about $350 a month for interest income. And we have over $3 million in this fund. For example, most of the water fund balance is in this savings account, if you will. A lot of the sewer fund cash balance is in this fund. A lot of the debt service funds that has cash that won't be used until, for example, November is in this fund. So it's a very convenient thing to have and to use. It is like a money market. We can get our money out with a one-day notice, or put money in with a one-day notice. So I'm looking for a question or a proposal, I guess.
I don't really have a question. I was just wondering how you answered is very accurate. I didn't realize we had that much money in the account now.
I'd urge counsel to look at our website each month. Today we posted our cash balance. Okay, tomorrow we posted our cash balance, and the cash balance shows you how much we have in the local government investment pool, as well as how much money we have in three different government bonds, about $500,000 each, or $1.5 total in government bonds. The interest rate varies from like 0.4 to 1.0, so we do better than the LGIP when we can park money for a specified period of time. A lot of our reserve funds acquired by our water sewer revenue bonds, most of that money is in the LGIP, as well as these higher interest rate government bonds, term bonds, typically 2 to 3 years maturity. So please take a look, not only the cash balance sheet, but the budget summary. We just finished that. We didn't post one in January because basically January is meaningless data, so we have February 2 months worth, as well as the two-month revenue graphs, which should be there very soon.
The clerk would like the floor.
Really quick, I just wanted to note the prospectus was included in the committee packet for Wednesday, so it was in there. I'm sorry if that wasn't noticed. Usually it's all attached to just one document. But I had a follow-up question from Mark. If we didn't put the money in there, what would we do with the money?
So we do CDs at banks, spread around, or choose a firm that spreads their CDs around different banks, so we get the FDIC insurance. It'd be, well, more administrative work, which is not a problem. I don't know that we get a better rate. I haven't studied it lately.
Isn't the money insured through the state?
I believe so, but I'll have to verify.
I'd add, too, that there is a management fee, but it is, I think, relatively low. One of the big advantages to the local government investment pool is its liquidity. Every morning by 9 o'clock, you can call and either move as much money you want in or move as much money you want back out if you have certain cash needs. So it's very liquid in that regard. And it does, if we were to go the route of like a CD, we would literally need to find $200 or $500 or $700,000 that we could, for a set period of time, be sure that we don't need. The advantage of the pool is if we have a big capital project and all of a sudden, you know, they got more monies coming in, we can move monies around. So it's extremely liquid. The fees are usually extremely low.
And up until recently being the last probably 5 or 10 years, the yields have been decent too. So I think years ago we used to get a considerable amount of interest off these money. Now I think no matter where you put the money, you're going to be looking at sub 1% monies for relative short-term investments.
So would you like to make a motion to approve that resolution?
Yes, I would. I make a motion to approve that resolution.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Councilperson Goodrich, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I was reading through this, and I had a concern with the part of this that said that we had to come up with matching funds for any grant monies that we received, and that one of the possible sources for that matching funds was park mitigation fees, if I remember correctly, when I read through this. My concern is if we go out for money and get grant money, do we have the money to match, and do we know how much we're looking for? And it seemed like it was just kind of like, well, we're going to go out for a grant, but I didn't really catch how much we're going to go for. Do we have the matching funds? Cause one of the things that kind of irks me sometimes is the strings that come with money. And just because it's, you know, out there, doesn't mean it's necessarily a good deal. So I was concerned about that, and before we, you know, proceed, I just wanted to make sure that we had our ducks in a row, that we don't get ourselves into something where we've taken money and now all of a sudden we have to figure out where we're going to come up with it and raise fees or do something else.
Mm-hmm. if you're aware, we actually have preliminarily applied for two. One is the boardwalk from the library to the ball fields, which is the bigger of the two projects. And the other one is the Star Park down at Pioneer Park itself. Starting with the last one first, I know that Yori has put together information for both grants. These grants are on the state comes out with different grant categories every year. So this category of grant comes out, I believe, every 2 years. So I think it was kind of an opportunistic situation where we wanted to kind of get ourselves known out there. The Star Park, we believe the costs there are going to be about $450,000. Those costs are a little easier to estimate currently than the boardwalk, because the Star Park, as most of you are aware, is a playfield. It has playfield equipment, and so the ability to open up a catalog and determine what kind of material you want or equipment you want, and then how much you'll need as far as other labor, you can usually do a decent job of estimating that. For the Star Park, again, the $450,000, right now the match, the 50% match, Yori is saying that it would come out of impact fees or development in lieu of fees, the park impact fees. So we would need to look to see what other grant opportunities are out there, because there are some other local grantors that might be interested in also funding this. So if we were to get the Star Park grant and we had other funding grantors locally, then we would just need to see if we could find the funds internally to come up with our match. So that one probably won't be as nebulous, if you will, as the boardwalk. If you remember, the boardwalk is slated to go from the library after it's constructed to the ball fields. We have a proposed route. We have talked to some engineers, most notably the engineer that built the Lummi boardwalk. It was a parallel to, I think it's what, Pina Road, I think mm-hmm. it was called?
Paxton Road.
And that boardwalk is probably a little more elaborate as far as the width and some of the features. It has solar lights that are motion sensored and what have you. But we came up with a per square foot cost based on that. And so from that, we came up with what might be considered the overall cost for this project. So the idea was is that for the boardwalk, the costs were estimated conservatively high using the higher Lummi boardwalk numbers. And for the Star Park, we felt a little bit more comfortable coming up with exactly what the cost might be. We do not have a design for the boardwalk yet. So it might be that many of these grantor agencies want to see the evolution of a project. So if we don't get the funding for the boardwalk this year, it may just raise the awareness on the state level, allow us to know what some of the successful grant applications look like, so we could kind of get ourselves prepared for for next year's, our next 2 years grant round. So I think right now the idea would be that the Star Park would be probably the most economically feasible project for the city right now. But we wanted to kind of get the state to be aware of both projects, at least from a conceptual standpoint.
What is the dollar amount that you came up with for the boardwalk?
I was looking, and I don't have that with
me. I do. It's $800,000. I have Yuri's.
Yeah.
It's $800,000. Looking for a land grant, the RCO grant of $375,000, and then the rest would come from other funding sources.
And just to be clear, this resolution simply authorizes staff to move forward. So this isn't the this isn't actually the application. This isn't the city asking for the money at this time. This simply lets staff even work on it in general with this agency. So this agency wants to see that there's a interest from the governing body to move forward. So totally legitimate question. You know, if you're going to approve this, then you're saying we do want to at least keep putting effort into these projects. And you know, the PERTAB has worked really, really hard on the Star Park, and the next phase of that is trying to seek out funding.
Yeah, many times these grantor agencies have technical workshops that you can go to, and they can say these are the kind of projects we're looking for, and then they follow that up, normally after such an authorization as this, with more one-on-one consultations with potential applicants, so they can learn your project a little better, give you some ideas of what they've seen from some other applicants, because they do this. This is a statewide competition. This isn't something in Whatcom County. So as our clerk said, this allows the state to say to themselves, Ferndale is aware, or at least the city council is aware, that these projects are considered important and they're going to be applying for it, and it kind of moves it a little bit forward and allows the city to start working with the grantor agency and with local partners to kind of build up and bring out the application to a point where
the basis of Star Park, as discussed at the PERTAB, was that when the council helped us pass regulations where a developer can basically supply labor or materials at retail in lieu of his parks mitigation fee. So at this point, we hadn't looked at an actual city cash match.
Right.
We'd looked at matching from developers. We can all use, using that one, we can use actually city land as a match value, of which we already have the land, and we designated locations. So the value of the land can be used in a match for the grant. So
yeah, in that way, too, the boardwalk, part of the proposed route is actually going to go through private property right now, which is proposed for development. And so Yuri's working with that property owner to dedicate, like an easement, if you will, across his land, which we could be able to use as part of our non-cash match as well.
I'm just concerned that if we go down the route, that we make sure that we have the funding. Staff here has been really good at getting grants. But to say, well, we're going to think about, we may get some money from over here, we may get some additional funds over here, that doesn't leave a warm and fuzzy feeling to me until we actually, if we get them, great. I'm more thinking if we're going to go after these projects where we need, let's see, $400,000 for the boardwalk and $200,000 for the park, that's $600,000 that we as a city have the potential to come up with, a certain part of that matching funds. Do we have $600,000 right now to do that? And that's my concern. And finance director just shook his head, no, we don't. So
right now.
Not right now. But,
think of this.
So if there's no financial strings tied to this resolution,
right,
and that will come later, then I see, okay, let's pursue it.
This opens up the ability to
have
that.
But if this is putting this into anything where it possibly ties our hands, then I would not vote for it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. This surprisingly enough, some entities actually apply for grants and get grants, and the entity has no idea about it. So that's one of the reasons why this agency in particular has required these authorization resolutions. So that way you know what we know, and they know that everyone knows the same thing. So again, this just will hopefully start the conversation so we can get into the more technical aspects of this and refine not only the cost and our match, but also the parameters of what we're going to be building and any local funding partners we might find.
Okay, motion to move forward on the resolution.
So moved.
Okay, move to second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries 7-0. Next up is capital project updates.
Good evening, Council. Katie Ratter, Public Works Project Manager. Just got a few things to give you an update on. The first will be Cottage Place Sewer. Last time I gave an update, we had a few things to kind of finish up. All the underground work is done. Stremler gravel installed just over 300 feet of sewer and a new fire hydrant on that road. Right now we're waiting for spring. Hopefully it'll show up one of these days. We're also waiting for the asphalt plants to open so that we can pave the road back. So that's about where we're at with that. So if anybody has any questions on that project?
Mm-hmm.
Nope. Okay. Next on the list is the Main Street tree installation. I think the week before last, we had Bremen Contractors come out and install 43 street trees. There's a variety of cherry, maple, ginkgo, and I think there's probably something else there that I can't, some sort of fancy Latin name, but those are all installed and ready to go. We're talking to her about, the owner, about long-term watering, so that's where we're at on that project.
Councilperson Ingram?
Katie, there's a couple of stretches along there where there's a tree, and then a long stretch of grass with no trees.
Yes.
What's up with that?
There are, when the street tree layout was put together, we worked with the design engineer who redesigned Church Road when we widened that, and that's the site triangle. It's funny that you ask, because Greg brought that up just before the meeting as well, about adding additional trees. So
but it's
a lot of that distance is to allow for, you know, cars either entering the road from, you know, Hendrickson or Eagle Place,
right,
or whatever, so you don't have to worry about having an obstructed site view traffic coming down the street. So
figured it was some intelligent thing. So.
Any more questions on that subject? Okay.
Engineer designed landscaping as opposed to landscape architect. Anyway. Okay. Next on the list is the Barrett Road pavement rehabilitation. The Transportation Improvement Board awarded the city about $380,379,000, if you're really keeping close track, for a pavement preservation on Barrett Road. The project limits for that project is Barrett between Main Street and Smith Road. And so we got started working on the design for that project. There will be spots where we need to dig out the existing roadway where it's really failed and the subgrade is in terrible shape. Dig that out, add new road base, and then we'll do some mostly overlay on Barrett Road to fix that up and hopefully get some more life out of that road. And so we're pretty much waiting to Church Road is really gearing up and is the focus of everybody's attention right now. So once we get that out to add and underway, maybe not necessarily underway, but kind of on its way to getting constructed, then we'll start focusing in on Barrett Road to get that fully designed and out to add. So I don't know if anybody has any questions on that. Okay. All right. My favorite, Church Road. I think when you guys had your last council meeting, there was a homeowners association meeting at Lake Ridge, and I was fortunate enough to be invited to attend that meeting. I thought it went really well. I was able to explain to at least that homeowners association basically, you know, what the scope of the project, the schedule, the things that they should be concerned about as far as, you know, what they'll see coming to and from their homes during construction. So we did that bit of PR. As far as what's going on the road, there's still the various utility companies are out relocating their facilities. Since my last update at council, PSE has completed their work with the exception. There's one transformer that they have to move kind of by Lake Ridge on the west side of the road. And then once all the other utilities that are located on their old poles are done, they'll come in and they'll pull their poles. I don't know if you've had a chance to drive up Church Road in the dark. It is awesome with the lights, in my opinion.
It is really awesome.
I almost drove off the road a couple of times admiring the lights. But if you haven't had a chance to look at that, the new LED lights are in and on, and it's quite a bit brighter. Long church. Comcast right now is out there working on their facilities. They've been plagued by the snowy weather just the same as anybody else, so we're experiencing some delays due to the snow and the ice. The utility companies, they're the same crews that relocate their facilities are also the crews that go out and deal with storm damage, so people are out of service. So they're having to deal with that. I talked to Comcast last week after the last snow, and they were delayed a little bit. I haven't had a chance to talk to them after this most recent bout of weather. I know the North County was hit pretty bad with an ice storm, so I'm not sure if they're having to deal with storm repair or not, but I'll get more information tomorrow. We've got a meeting. So after Comcast is done, again, they work their way down the pole. BlackRock will take their facilities and move those over. That'll take about a week. And then Frontier will arrive, and Frontier's facilities are actually located on the west side of Church Road. As part of this project and as part of the city standard, we can require that all of the overhead utilities locate on the same set of poles, which we have done on Church Road to kind of clean that up. So Frontier will be moving their facilities. It'll take about 6 weeks for them to move their stuff from the west side to the east side. Couple weeks after Frontier gets started, Cascade Gas actually has quite a bit of gas main to replace, like 1,500 feet. So Cascade will probably get in there about mid-April to replace their gas main as well as side services because they've got an old main there. And they also need to lower their main, especially in the kind of the worst part of the hump in the hill between Heights and Crestline. As part of that, and we went over this in council committee, so the members of the Public Works Committee are pretty familiar with this, we're actually going to be moving forward with a full road closure starting April 14th. So what that means is Church Road will be closed basically between Thornton and Main Street, and to the public it will... the road closure will look the same for, in order to allow, basically it's for, to give Cascade the room that they need to get their work done, because they'll be digging up the west side of the road. And that's the beginning of the end, basically, for the roadway. So to enable them to get in there and get their work done so it doesn't impede our contractor when we get somebody involved as far as, you know, redoing the street itself, we're going to close that road, shut off traffic, and allow them to get their work done. So we've been in contact, or I've been in contact with WTA is aware. I need to contact the fire district and I think the garbage company. I'm also working with the school district as far as buses go. Just to give an idea. Our detour is actually going to be Main Street, Vista, Thornton, Olson Road, and around again. Like I said, that'll happen mid-April and pretty much continue through the end of this year. It'll continue through. Thank you, Sam. it'll continue through the end of the year while we reconstruct the road. Really, we're under a time frame in order to get this project done. We only got so much money. We can't extend the project more than one construction season. So it's really important that basically close off that road to through traffic. Of course, local access will be maintained. To allow the contractors to get in there and get the work done so we can get it completed this year.
So from April till December?
Earlier than that, probably end of September till we get it paved. So we know going into this that this is going to be an inconvenience to the public, and it's a concern for lots of folks that use that road. I'll be working with Sam. Sam does a great job in getting notices out to the public, both in the form of social media, Facebook, which is really kind of, it's a great way to get information out to the public, our web page, press releases, which then go out to the various media outlets, and that sort of thing. So we'll be working very hard to get that information out. We'll also try to use information on, you know, signage when people are coming into town, letting them know the reader board sign at La Bounty. The electronic reader board sign is a good option, and then we'll put regular notification signs up ahead of where people should turn off on Vista so they don't forget and have to go out to Olson Road if they're heading west. As far as the bid schedule, we're going out to add. The advertisement to solicit bids from contractors will occur this Wednesday, the 5th. There's a three-week advertisement period, so sometimes the bid opening date can change. It's scheduled for 3/26, March 26th. And so we'll be getting bids and know a little bit more about, you know, what kind of response we get as far as price on this project. So that's about all I had.
Councilperson Ingram?
Katie, is it economically feasible to possibly rent a couple of those portable reader boards, the ones that are mounted on the trailers, to maybe get one up towards Main, towards Church on Main, and maybe one over on Vista or something, just to let people know if they miss the one on Main Street, because that one on Main Street is really hard to, you almost have to park to let it cycle through its messages. But
something before Washington, maybe?
Yeah, something maybe before Washington, and let people know that you might want to turn here.
Yeah, our official detour route is actually up, I think it's up 3rd. So I can definitely look into that. That's a really good idea. We might be able to place a VMS, I guess they're called VMS signs, maybe at our pump station there just before you get to the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
So we can look at that.
Mm-hmm. Councilperson Hansen?
Well, I was just going to mention that virtually everyone that lives on the east side has an alternative route. There's a couple houses right on Church Road that do not have alternative routes. It's the west side people that are going to have, the Lake Ridge Estates folks, that will have the dilemma. It's going to be a long enough closure, when April 15th to, let's say, 1st of October, that the locals are going to get used to it. It's going to be, notice I didn't say they're going to be happy, I just said they're going to get used to it. It's the ones that come, they're using their GPS to go somewhere, and the GPS tells them to go up Church Road and turn left on Norway, and they're like, I'm stuck, I can't go any further. But I don't think we're going to have trouble with local people. So many people are looking forward to this and the completion of it that I think we could muster through for 6 months.
In addition to the, you know, the pre-warning signs, you know, if you're like me, kind of you get in your car and you're like a sheep and you kind of go the route you always go. So in addition to the, you know, the pre-warning signs trying to get people's attention, hey, don't forget, instead of driving all the way to Church Road and then going, oh, shoot, I should have turned on 3rd, you know, we'll put those out there. But if you get in that in the detour, we'll also have our standard construction detour signage where, you know, Church Road will have the barricades, you know, detour ahead, go up Olson Road and around. So, you know, we'll try to catch both ahead of time, and then if you get there and, you know, you need to get around, then that'll all be addressed as far as the detour route itself.
Well, there will always be a route that somebody who lives there can use to get home. Am I correct? I mean, we're not going to isolate anybody ever. Well, maybe for a half hour.
Absolutes are really hard. I mean, there are times. Church Road's so very narrow. There are times where it's going to be physically impossible for work to be accomplished and allow traffic to get through safely. You know, at the end of the day, we want everybody to be able to get home to their families, whether you're in a car or you're running the equipment. And so there might be times where somebody will have to wait, or they'll be turned around. You might have to drive and, you know, go from the come in from the south end or the north end if we, you know, we're installing sewer or storm or whatever else, and you can't physically get there. So generally, yes, maybe absolutely, not always.
Oh, that was a wonderful answer.
Yeah, it's very definitive, right? Is there any other
questions on that project?
Right.
Library?
Yes. The library continues to work. As you have seen, they're trying to button it up. We're working on the roof right now, trying to get the roof on. Obviously, this is a time of year when people appreciate having roofs over their head, especially workers. And you see they've temporarily blocked up some of the windows to stop the driving wind and rain from blowing in and puddling on the inside. You can see also those four clear stories that are boarded up. They'll eventually be cut open, and obviously lights are going to go in there. And you may have noticed on the edge of the library closest to City Hall, there's about 8 square skylights that you can now see that have gone in. So work continues quite a bit on the roofing. Inside, the electrical work and the mechanical room continues. Tomorrow we have our weekly construction meeting. And if you remember, we're going to be having a tour for council members and some of the library folks immediately afterwards. One tour's at noon. The other one's at 2:30. We'll muster at the conference room where you can get your hard hats and probably receive a very short but thorough safety briefing before they escort you on to the site. So it's kind of neat to go inside and actually kind of see what the space is looking like. But
it's tomorrow?
That's tomorrow, yeah. Yes. Otherwise, weather is our big deal right now. It's as anyone who's tried to do anything outside the last few weeks, it's a little challenging. In fact, there are days when they literally just could not work, and so those will be days that we add on to the end of the project. But otherwise, I believe they're going at a good clip, and there's nothing that has come up that has completely thrown the schedule off, except for what Mother Nature's tossing at us right now.
And can you explain to the council, in case they get phone calls like I get, why is it so close to the sidewalk?
Yeah, the reason why it's so close to the sidewalk is because it's supposed to be, I guess, is the easy answer.
Oh, that's a good answer.
Our
that customer would have liked that answer.
A few years back, we changed the setbacks in the downtown core. If you go to any good-sized city, buildings are normally right up to the sidewalk. That's the traditional urban setback, which is not that much at all. And so that's what we've adopted in the downtown core. This just happens to be the first building that has been built since those standards came out. We do have ways, the architects have come up with ways to soften that. There's one of the larger walls is slated to have what's called a green wall in front of it, and we're going to be working with the folks that are working on our landscaping to see if that's something that we can fit into our budget. A green wall is literally a wall made out of trays that plants go into, and then they have drip irrigation. And you've probably seen them in cities without really realizing what they are, but with the full face of the building as close to the road as it is, at least on one part of the building, the idea is to kind of soften it with some sort of vegetation. So it's by design. It is kind of the new face of Ferndale, if you will. There'll be times in the future when that will be the norm rather than the exception.
Any questions on that project? Okay. Moving on.
Before the tour, there's going to be a construction meeting. Is it 11 o'clock?
Yeah, 11 o'clock. Yeah.
Okay, next up, the discussion on the Slater Road I-5 Regional Transportation Financing Strategy Program.
Is there a handout coming?
The first is all.
I don't know why she had to leave the comfortable seat.
It's not that comfortable. We need new chair.
Literally.
So just an update on what we're
working on at Slater, and there's a lot of different things in play at Slater. As you well know, a couple of years back, the city, as part of updating its transportation element, we were focused on Main Street, but we also looked at Grandview and Slater. Slater Road is really a road that is in common to more jurisdictions than probably any other roadway in Whatcom County, where the Port of Bellingham, Lummi Nation, City of Bellingham, City of Ferndale, Whatcom County, Washington State Department of Transportation, the refineries, Lummi Island, I could go on, all have that road in common. And up to this point, Slater Road had kind of been forgotten. It was not the road that had the highest volumes in it. And then suddenly, over the last couple of years, we start to see that really each one of those jurisdictions has plans for it and want to grab their piece of the pie. The new jail is coming in. Lummi Nation is expected to have higher than normal agriculture use that generates a whole bunch of traffic there. The City of Ferndale also anticipates that there's going to be significant development going on. And over time, they will begin to use more and more of the available capacity at Slater. Right now, the left-hand turning movements on Slater Road are failing. The level of service, any measurement, that's a failing intersection. But the costs of improving are going to be immense. We can put stop signs on Slater Road, and that's what Whatcom County anticipates doing later on this year. But stop signs are not going to handle the anticipated capacity. Costco by itself, if it goes continues to go into Bellingham, is expected to generate 40 trips per hour, which might be on the low end of what's expected. So everybody realizes that Slater is going to be diminished over time. The improvements are going to be significant. So we have gathered together with all of the other jurisdictions to talk about what sort of improvements might be necessary and how to fund that. That's one set of meetings that we are having occur. And I believe that's called the technical meeting, the technical group. We are also working with the Washington State Department of Transportation on a corridor planning study that will go from Bakerview Road all the way up to Grandview. It's really the gap in the analysis in Northwest Washington as it currently exists. Hopefully out of that, WashDOT is going to be able to not only take a look at our Main Street improvements that we've identified, but also Slater Road, and we'll be able to take that information to the next stage, which is really at federal highways, and look at funding, look at approvals for IJR. We'll also be able to take it to Olympia to talk about here is a collectively agreed upon plan and seek funding through that. And then there's another group through the Whatcom Council of Governments that's also meeting to kind of look at that transportation study. Altogether, there's a lot of studying going on. There's a lot of groups moving forward and talking, at least, and we're hoping that coming out of that, elected officials are going to have in front of them at some point in the near future interlocal agreements stating that we all agree that we're in this together and that the funding really needs to start soon. I guess I'll try to answer any questions that you may have. The one thing is we know that we're kind of an uncharted territory. Multi-jurisdictional efforts to improve failing interchanges nationwide haven't been terribly successful. But so there's a lot of obstacles in the way, and we're hopeful that we're starting early enough where we can find good improvements.
Any questions for Uri on this project? Councilperson Ingram?
Uri, have we gotten any indication from the port as to whether they still would like to do a northern entrance into the airport grounds?
I would say yes, we definitely have. They would like to do it. There's some Federal Aviation Administration guidelines where most of the northern access is going to be in close proximity to the runway. So that really needs to be armored so there's not a 757 touching down on a minibus. But that is doable. It's just some extra expense. So that's one of the reasons why they're in this conversation as well.
You mean covered?
Yeah.
Like a tunnel?
Covered,
oh. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're along the freeway.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
The clerk has a question for you.
Just clarification. The corridor study was from Bakerview Road to Grandview?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Yuri on this project? Okay. Seeing none. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next up, item E, discussion on the Storm Utility 6-year financial plan.
Good evening, Council and members of the public. Wednesday last week, we discussed utility tax, storm fund rates. We have a rather, for this utility at least, a substantial capital improvement program. I believe you have a copy of this multicolored sheet. That's been updated since I showed you the spreadsheet on Wednesday, and I guess I have to apologize. I got data update Monday afternoon, but I was out in training, snow day training. I didn't get it till Wednesday morning, so I didn't get it early enough to update this for you. So the change is on the page 34 of your packet, and you probably should unclip it and fold it out. It's easier to read that way. That's what I did. And basically the changes of TIP are for the year 2000. I don't know what you've got on your computer, sir.
Go ahead and zoom.
I have paper. Anyway.
20-something.
CIP grew in the year 2014, this year, by $75,000 from last week. And $50,000 of that is a better estimate on Church Road, which we want to do. We got federal and state funding for Church Road. We want to do that. And a $25,000 growth from $100,000 to $125,000 on the storm work related to the City Hall parking lot and library. There's an old line in there. And so what that does on page 34, putting in the $815,000 in capital needs for this year, 2014, for the storm fund, it kind of drives those monthly charges, those monthly rates. If you look at the top of page 34, the monthly rates are highlighted. Last year we were $10 a month for a residence for storm. The only way to make this fit is to go to $14 a month mid-year this year, and then $14.50 and then $16 in 2016 with cost of living increases beyond that. So page 34 shows at $14 a month starting with the June 30th mailings, it shows a pretty skinny cash balance of only 45% of reserve goal. Page 35, if you just skip to that, the only difference here is where we bring forward the full-time additional employee into mid-year 2015, with about $40,000 in cost in 2015 versus the previous page. So that drives the $14 this year, then goes to $15, and then $16, and then cost of living after that. There's a minimum amount of phasing on these capital projects in both scenarios. That happens out in 2017 and slides a little bit into 2018. That's the year on the CIP where we have programmed a new sweeper for $300,000. Possibly get some grants or possibly finance it and spread those payments out instead of all one lump sum.
The whole street sweeper expense is going to go to a storm?
That's the plan. Saying, why do we sweep streets to prevent all that crap from going into the storm system?
That's creative, but I'm not sure I agree with it.
What would be your interpretation, sir?
I would think we'd put some of it in the street funds. Streets and utilities, not just the entire thing into this.
And what's the rationale for putting it in streets? It looks prettier, cleaned up?
Well, yeah.
I agree with you. It would look prettier.
How does this actually purify the water?
prevents all that crap going into the water. How's that?
We do have a presentation on
the follow. Okay.
The stormwater program.
You're more technical than the treasurer.
And then we can answer that question.
All right, we'll leave it for that.
Yeah. She'll follow me shortly. Yeah. So anyway, I know the $14 is a kind of a big jump from 10. That's 40% increase. And to pay for these $815,000 this year's capital items, we need it for the June 30th mailings, billings. And then it goes 14, 14, 15, and then 16, and then stops with only inflation after that.
I'm looking here out to 17. I see what's the deficit of $200,000 in there? Or?
That row 36 for capital expenditure phasing, is that the question, the $200,000 negative there?
Well, that and the 915 above it.
Yeah, 915 is what the CIP calls for that year. And it's just not affordable out there. We have to slide some of that spending into the next year. It's a one-year slide of $200,000.
Oh, okay.
And we'll be covering those
details. Oh, yeah, I remember that now. Yeah, okay. So the COLA will cover what we need to do in 17 then.
Yeah, with that $200,000 slide. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. And now, things change. I mean, as you know, the budget changes the day after we publish, and this CIP certainly will change somewhat. But this funding plan, if you want to do the CIP as approved, you need this kind of rate revenue.
Yeah, and actually, that might be a good segue into our folks from our surface water utility are going to be spending a little bit of time going through the CIP and explaining that, as well as some of the operational issues that they're facing right now, so you can get a better grasp for some of the issues that are addressed in the spreadsheets.
Good evening, Council. Janice Marlega, Public Works Director. In Public Works, we have a surface stormwater management program presentation. So I have Wendy LaRocque, our stormwater manager here, and then also Bo Westford, maintenance supervisor. So we're kind of this joint effort on presenting just the overview on our stormwater program, the maintenance requirements, and then capital. And so we're going to start out with Wendy covering all of the permit requirements.
So, Wendy LaRocque, City of Ferndale, Stormwater Manager. If you want to get out this packet, if you haven't already, now we get to tell you what you're getting for your money. Right? So, let's see. Okay. A little harder to read in here than it was on my computer, but we'll start out with the rules. So in the 80s, the federal government passed the Clean Water Act, which basically told the country that we need to clean up our water. The Washington State Department of Ecology, the last bullet there, enacted the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit, so that's NPDES. That's basically the municipal permit that allows cities to discharge their dirty storm water into waters of the state. So waters of the state is any ditch, river, lake, eventually out to the bay, the sound, the ocean. Basically saying we can let the storm water go over all our polluted surfaces as long as we clean it before it gets to these waters of the state. So what is stormwater? And hopefully this is review for most of us, but just in case, I thought I'd go over it. So stormwater is the runoff that occurs when precipitation from rain or snowmelt flows over the ground. why is this a problem? As it flows over the ground or any dirty surface, it's going to collect dirt, chemicals, pollutants, everything that's on the ground, dog waste, fertilizer, that's all going into the stormwater. So the study showed that 75% of the toxic chemicals getting into Puget Sound are basically from dirty stormwater. Here's an example. This was one of the first site visits I ever did. This property owner had just put out their grass seed, and it rained, and they had no best management practices, so all the water and all the seed just rushed into the storm drains and onto the road. All right, what's wrong with this picture? This is the slide I use when I go into classrooms. So leaves are not being composted. They're being trashed. Guys throwing litter on the ground that's going to wash into the storm drain, probably clog some things. The car is leaking fluid. That's going to wash into the storm drain. That guy is just randomly pouring oil down the drain. The sprinkler is overwatering onto the impervious surface, so that's just water that's going to pick up anything like the oil that guy's dumping and push it into the storm drain. And the gal is spilling fertilizer, which when it rains is going to wash off and get into the storm drain. So what's the difference? The sewer manhole cover there goes to the wastewater treatment plant, not directly into Mike's office there, but the wastewater treatment plant behind that. The storm grate on the right side is going to go to a pond, and it's not going to be chemically treated. So now I'll just go over our stormwater program. Basically, what the program consists of is the municipal permit, maintenance and operations, drainage studies, dealing with drainage complaints, capital projects, flood prep and projects, mitigation and environmental permits that we get for city projects, pharmaceutical take-back program. So the permit, what's in the permit? That's the document I was telling you about earlier that's issued by the Department of Ecology. They say you can discharge your dirty storm water if you clean it. These are the things that you need to do before the water gets to the waters of the state, and this is stuff to help educate people, keep the water cleaner, so you have to do less cleaning before it gets to waters of the state. So public education, illicit discharge detection and elimination, controlling pollutants from construction, TMDL compliance, that's water quality monitoring for us, and operations and maintenance. Public education and outreach, this is anything from classroom presentations, newsletters, bat boxes, volunteer projects that, have to do with keeping mosquitoes out of the storm ponds, Facebook posts. Illicit discharge detection elimination, this is, part of this is our mapping system, so we hung up two maps on the wall. That's Brenna's working on getting our maps so that they're more accurate. Right now we just have some older data, but, it's a good start. Now we're looking at more as-built and going out in field verifying the system. Our prohibited discharge ordinance is something that allows us to go in and enforce when people are discharging pollutants or just basically getting anything into the storm drain that they're not supposed to be getting in there. So that the procedures for this include inspections. We have our hotline and response to a lot of Department of Ecology complaints or, calls, basically. And then the cleanup for all that. Controlling runoff from development and construction. This includes our stormwater control ordinance and a lot of development review. So that's when developers come in, they submit a plan. They, too, have to tell us how they're going to deal with their stormwater. Is it going to be on site? Is it going to go to a regional pond? That sort of thing. So that's something that Art works on, and Larry, and then myself. We have a lot of compliance issues with this as well. So there's initially what are they going to do, and then once it's the whole system is turned over to the homeowner, basically there's a lot of enforcement and education, just making sure that the homeowner knows that they need to take care of this system and what that entails, that sort of thing. So as many of you heard, that kind of comes into play with this new low-impact development that Ecology has basically mandated for the upcoming permit, that we're going to first look at low-impact development, which is keeping the water more on-site, let it infiltrate where it falls versus, you know, shunting it to a pond. But it's pretty difficult to get homeowners to want to comply with that. They don't want bioretention or rain gardens on their site. That's, you know, all falls under controlling runoff from development and construction. So this is just an example of what happens when you don't have a stormwater system. You get hoses on your sidewalk. That whole scenario gets messy when the water on the sidewalk freezes and people are slipping everywhere. You got water cascading down easements and causing a lot of flooding problems for people. With the storm system, it's a little neater, so it goes down the gutters into the pipe system, which then is discharged into a creek relatively nearby, hopefully. Compliance with total maximum daily load requirements for fecal, that's a long title for just saying that we need to test our water in several spots and determine how much fecal coliform is in the water. And then the idea is once you find the spots where there's the most fecal, you go in and try to do that illicit discharge detection, right? So where are there dogs? Are there any sewer lines that could possibly be leaking, that sort of thing? So we've made some progress downtown with some businesses, but there's still a lot of non-point sources, so, you know, little things here or there that keep the fecal numbers pretty high. We have a partnership with Windward High School and NIPSEC Salmon Enhancement Association, so they actually do five out of seven of our monitoring sites. So it's kind of an education outreach thing wrapped in. But this year I've been working on sort of our procedures for that to match them up with the different, the county had a big effort where, so we all have the same protocol basically, so we can put all our data into one database. All right, then Beau's going to talk about the next section.
Good evening. Thanks for letting us come out and do our little presentation on this. Beau Westford, maintenance supervisor. So why it's important that we're out doing this stuff is Keith had hit on it earlier with Mark about sweeping the streets, keeping our catch basins clean. All this stuff that comes off your car, brake dust, asbestos, your oil, sediment, all the mud that comes off of somebody that just went four-wheeling, falls on the road. That stuff can't go in the storm system, and when it does, these catch basins that we have that you see in the picture, they have a sump in them. All the heavy sink out, and they sit in the bottom of that sump until we come around and we clean a third of the city every year. So we have the city divided into thirds, basically from our northern portion to Main Street and then Main Street to Slater Road. There's three sections in there, and we clean it all the way east to west in those three sections. So every 3 years our whole system's cleaned, and we have over, there's way more than 1,500 now catch basins out there, way more than 25 miles of pipe. This is old data that we drug up, I think, in 2010 is when we went through this. And then ditches. Just to give you an idea about our ditches, just the Portalway annexation alone, just north of all the way to Grandview, we have 1.5 miles of open ditch that we have to maintain now. So when we took that from Whatcom County, it was in really poor condition, flooded on a regular basis in any kind of rainstorm. So we went out and we dug the whole system out. We cleaned it all out, hauled it off, and we've had two floods since then in 2011 that have actually cleared the road, and we've had to put up some signs. So cleaning those things is important, not just for transporting the water, but actually keeping the water in the ditches where they're supposed to be. So that's a huge benefit to us if we get out and clean that stuff. Where's the rest of it, Wendy? Wrong way. Okay, our ponds, stormwater facilities. We do an annual inspection on these, and way more often than annual for high water events where we're predicting probably a lot of water coming. We go and inspect these things throughout the winter, probably once a week, and then in the summer months, not so much, but they get cleaned out or weed-eated, mowed out twice a year, and both times are in the summer, once early spring, once at the end of the summer, with our summer forces, our crew that comes in and helps us with summer help. What do we got, 20 of these things out there, 21 of these now, something like that? some fenced, some not fenced, some have access, some don't. But then we have to go through and dredge these things, get them back to our as-built status of when we first got them. So here's just some ditches that we dug in 2013, Rural Avenue, short section, wasn't deep enough, wasn't conveying the water, had part of the culvert backed up, so we dug that out, put some BMPs down there, so when it went through the storms, when it went through them, by the time it hit Silver Creek there, it was all clean. Slater Road, I don't know if you guys saw what happened out on Slater Road, but a lot of Starkenberg had their bark and soil and stuff just fly away in the hot summer dust, and they're just filling those ditches out there. DOE's been actually working with them to make sure that stuff like that doesn't happen on their site anymore. But through that whole system, we're out there digging it out, and you know, RDS is out there, Recomp is out there. We have a lot of garbage in that system, and it does block a lot of the flow. So it opened up a lot of storm system last year on Slater Road. Barrett Road, it's just swampy. There's a lot of critters out in that area, and we get a lot of stormwater backing up. So it's pretty important that we go out there and dig that thing out once in a while, get out behind our pump station so we don't have any flooding there. And Hovander Road, BNSF, we had to get a permit from BNSF just to get into our ditch. It's in our right-of-way, but it's in their right-of-way, too. So to clean that out and get Hovander to drain, it was on the east side of Hovander, and or north side, depending on how you're looking at it. But that system hadn't been cleaned in a long time. In fact, it took us quite a while to find the original ditch line to get that thing dug out and staked out so that we could find it. Smith Road, always a good one out there. It was underwater today. I don't know if you guys drove through it. I saw some people out there playing, driving 50 miles an hour and seeing how hard they could hit that stuff and see if they could hydroplane maybe, but that goes under quite a bit, and that's, you know, no control of ours. BNSF owns the property out there that is inundated with beavers, and it's just plugged up. Street sweeping, again, Keith hit on this earlier, Councilmember Olson. Street sweeping, we do one Friday, or every Friday we sweep. We have four different shifts. We have four guys that volunteer for this shift. They come in at 2 o'clock in the morning. We sweep all the downtown every week. So all the downtown core gets every week. And then from that, they all have their own route that they go off and do during their route session. So if one of them's sick, the other guy comes in and sweeps for him, he does that guy's route. We don't change that so that people kind of get an understanding of when we might be there every fourth week. It's not always possible. Like, you see all the sand out here, it's going to take a full shift of just downtown. They probably won't get out of the downtown area after we start sweeping this sand. Stormwater pumps under the railroad tracks, just had a major upgrade to those. They're working great. Way better. We have an alarm system on them. We have telemetry now, so we know when there's a problem before it's underwater by 4 feet. And somebody calls us and says, you know what, I'm stalled out in this thing, come get me. So now we can see this down at the treatment plant. They get a phone call through an alarm system, and we know when this is going on. Our decant disposal, the 2014-2015 CIP, basically we can't take the street sweepings and just dump them in a landfill anymore. This used to be a really cheap and effective way to do business. Suck it up with the sweeper, haul it off to a pit, dump it. They want the fill. We need a place to dump. It worked great. Now we don't have that luxury because it's contaminated. Even though our stuff that we've got sitting tests really well, still will not let us dump it. So now it's up to us to either find a new site or build a site to construct some kind of cover to keep this stuff contaminant free so that we can dispose of it and we're not paying the heavy haul charge on the soaked material. We got to keep it dry to cut the cost, because it's going to be by the pound, and every pound we ship them is going to cost more money for us. So the drier we can keep it, the cheaper it's going to get. And then the training on the LID facilities, that's an ongoing thing annually for our crew. We try to keep up with maintenance activities, the best management practices for the facilities, and make sure that we understand what they're put in place for so that we don't necessarily have another repeat of Conoco Complex where hey, these are just ponds. Let's cut everything down and make it look pretty, which didn't turn out so well. But now if you go down there, all the new vegetation, it looks great. Got all kinds of grasses growing that we didn't before, so it's a good deal. But yeah, our maintenance is pretty extensive with the storm system, and it's only getting more and more every year. We're adding to this, our storm facilities every year. We get more ponds, we get more pipe, and it's getting longer and it's getting bigger, and it really can cause some problems for us with the new mandates of how clean you have to keep the storm system, where and when you can't dispose of it. It's probably going to be a problem before it gets better. Put it out. Any questions?
Well, to be clear, since there was a question about street sweeping, it's not a beautification issue. It's completely to keep it out of the stormwater system.
Yeah, the beautification part is there, obviously. Clean street is a good-looking street. There's no doubt about it. But a clean street is just a clean street. It keeps it out of the storm system. The heavy silts, the deposits, the oil, brake dust, all that stuff, it keeps it out of the system the more we can sweep it.
Nobody's arguing that. Where did the first street sweeper, where did that get purchased and accredited to?
What's that? Sorry, I didn't hear your question.
It's more for Mark.
Which account?
I'd have to look.
Is it safe to say it wasn't from the stormwater?
Tell you?
I have to look. I'll get you an answer tomorrow. I'll get everybody an answer.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, so next. Now, a big component of our stormwater program is our stormwater capital improvement plan. And every year when we update our six-year TIP, our six-year transportation improvement program, we also take a look at our utility CIPs. So we use that opportunity to go through our current plan and update. We bring that information to the committee. We usually have three or four discussions. And then we have an open house. And then we bring that information back to the full council and for council approval and adoption. So here on our CIP in 2013 update, we changed the format for our storm CIP because we were just looking a couple years out. But as we get more information, we continue to work on our inventory. We do drainage studies. We're able to start looking out, you know, more than just a couple years. So in 2013, with our 2014 plan, we were able to actually look out the 6 years. So that's where there's a big change in our CIP from in 2014 2013. And so what we do is when we start to look at our update to our storm CIP, we start with our 6 year TIP. And here, this is our street projects. Are identified in this program. And so that's where, I know you can't read it there, but we did provide you with a handout. And so what we start out with is just listing our street projects. Because every street project, along with reconstructing the street, we also have to address stormwater. So we have to collect, convey, treat, detain our stormwater on every street project that we do. And typically, utilities have to pay for utility improvements, unless we're able to supplement with additional grants or funding elsewhere. But typically, our approach is you go into it with utilities paying for utility improvements. So on our CIP, what we have been doing for the last 5 years, for each project, we include a cost estimate. Church Road. And what we do is we break this down. Here's the street cost. And then for each of the utilities, we have a cost. So storm, water, and sewer. So then we take these numbers here, and then we incorporate those. Not yet. We incorporate each of these costs into that utility CIP. So for the storm one, we have on here church, and then on our we kind of go down our street program, and then we go out the 6 years. So like here we're showing Lego, Ferndale Terrace, Thornton Street. So we don't include all of the projects. We're just looking out for that six years. On that. And that's what starts the development of our storm CIP.
And so let's see if we can go ahead and advance to the next one. So here's just a couple of examples of projects that were completed in 2013. So for Main Street, everyone's very familiar with this project, so we're showing just the before and after. As each of these projects include, the stormwater component. And here, this is the site of the regional pond, and this is a pond that was constructed for both Main Street and Church. And there's the after. And here, and then as part of the construction of the stormwater pond, we impacted wetlands, so we had to do some mitigation. So this shows the site, the mitigation site before and after. Yeah, so we're not just constructing the stormwater pond, we also had to mitigate for constructing that pond. And then another project for 2013 was Thornton Road. And same thing, there wasn't a stormwater system in place, and so when we completed our street project, we had to design a complete stormwater system. And then also on Vista Drive. Yeah, so if you looked at the prior CIP, it would include the projects. It would include each of these street projects. And then in addition to identifying projects through our six-year TIP, we also are working on drainage studies. We receive drainage complaints. So we take those. We look into that drainage issue and identify, do we need to do a study? Is this something that maybe maintenance can just take care of? Do we need to, what do we need to do to pursue this problem? And so I think most of you are familiar with the Gateway study. This is completed for the planned action EIS area, Main Street and Axton, I-5. And so out of this study, there's actually, we have 4 projects were identified, and we've added those to our storm CIP. And those, we've just kind of spread those out over the 6 years. And on that, as far as, the schedule on completing those, it's just going to depend on when development occurs. And so what we are trying to do is just plan and try to get out ahead rather than it be kind of a hurry right at the end. And some of these stormwater projects, there's usually a lot of permitting that has to go along with it. So if we wait until just right before we need that improvement in place, then we're not going to be left with very many options. So we're trying to, if we can identify the project, at least start some preliminary design and get an idea on what some of the permitting requirements may be, then we're going to be that much more out ahead. Because sometimes, for the permitting, it could take maybe a couple years. So someone says, hey, when can you replace that pipe? Or when can you do this other stormwater improvement? We're typically looking at a couple years out. So it's not something that we could just say, oh, we can just complete that and get that done in a couple months. It doesn't work that way. And then here's an example of this was a drainage complaint and a maintenance problem that we were dealing with quite a few years. This goes back a number of years. And so we were finally able to reach an agreement with the property owner, get the necessary permits, and get the funding, and to move forward and get this project completed. And so, the improvements here have made a huge difference after we've gotten a lot of rain to go out there, and the maintenance has cut down drastically. Mm-hmm. So this was a really good investment on the city's part. Okay, so in 2013, we completed a number of projects, capital projects, using storm funds. If we didn't have those storm funds, we would not have been able to move forward on some of those projects. So storm fund, very important, not just for storm, help for, complete the project, complete the funding on our street projects. And then looking ahead, 2014, Church Road, top of the list, because we've been planning for that one for a long time. So even though we have the stormwater pond complete, we still have to install storm pipe in Church Road. And so on that there, we estimated between $300,000, $350,000 to do that work. And so that's what we're showing in our storm CIP. And that there's been scheduled for, a number of years. And then in addition to that, then to support development, the Neubauer Pond expansion, we've been working on that. We have design work underway now. So we need to go in and expand that existing pond in order to accommodate future development. And then on the City Hall storm pipe, that was a project that we had not planned for when we were working on the CIP. But just based on, we just took another additional, well, it's kind of a more thorough review of that and the design that was planned for the library parking lot, and decided that we really couldn't leave that old pipe in the parking lot, since now we would be driving on it, that we really need to get in there and get that pipe removed and replaced before the parking lot is paved. And so we've added that to the storm CIP. And then, you know, looking out ahead, we've got construction projects, and then also just some of the design work on our Brown Road, and that's a picture there where we're losing some of the shoulder. And then we've gotten kind of a hole there developing, maybe possibly like this little sinkhole developing in the road. Mm-hmm. And that project there has been on our CIP since 2011. And because of the permitting requirements, we're just kind of anxious on getting at least some design work underway. And then Third Avenue, the Public Works Committee is pretty familiar with that project. We're looking at a combined stormwater transportation benefit district project, using stormwater funds for the pervious concrete along the shoulders, and then TBD funds to replace the rest of the pavement. And then on the decant facility, we're looking at just starting the design work on that. And Bo covered a little bit. So we're headed with that, and what's the next one? Okay, flood fighting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I just have a couple more. Just finishing up on more aspects of the program. So Bo and I were here in October when we had the Flood Awareness Week, when we basically covered everything we do for flood prep and flood fighting. We've also been attending the System-Wide Improvement Framework meetings, and actually some people are starting to get along, so we might go get somewhere with that. That's with the county, the diking districts, all sorts of private property owners and farmers. As Janice was saying, anytime we do a project, chances are somewhere in Ferndale you're going to hit a wetland, and then we have to mitigate for that. So for the mitigation projects, I have to go through, get the mitigation plan, then we have to do the construction plans, get the contractor out there, and then we follow up with a 10-year maintenance program, which includes replacing any plants that die, and all those blue tubes eventually have to come off. So I mean, there's just a lot of work that goes into these projects. And the last thing I wanted to mention was our pharmaceutical take-back program, which I started a few years back at the request of the PD. Basically, this is a site in Hagen Pharmacy where you can go take your pharmaceuticals so that people aren't flushing them down the toilet and getting them into the water, which goes to the Nooksack, which we used to drink, but somebody drinks it, so yeah, might as well keep it out of the water for the fish as well. So that's a basic overview of the program, and then this is the job description that we came up with for the technician that we had requested last year. So as you can see, there's a lot of aspects to the program, all of which I could use help on. But this person would basically be doing a lot of inspections, enforcement, working on the low-impact development inspections, especially that are coming down the pike with DOE's requirements, also with our maps. One of them kind of shows the whole system, and then one of them is the one we're going back and making more accurate. So there's still a lot of field verification that has to occur with that. That's another requirement of the Department of Ecology. Questions?
Councilperson Goodrich?
In the projects for roads, we were talking about doing Barrett this year. Is Barrett going to require any storm water? Because I know this wasn't on the list.
Barrett is a pavement preservation project. So basically, we're staying within the existing footprint. And there may be a few areas where we just dig out the pavement, but we're just overlaying it. So, existing footprint,
So, no stormwater. Not on that one.
But on Thornton, when we did that by the school, we
Thornton
actually...
reconstruct, yeah.
Yeah, so
mm-hmm.
therefore we had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Councilperson Olson?
You mentioned $300,000 for stormwater for Church Road.
Mm-hmm.
Is that in the bid award?
It's included as bid items. So we set up separate schedules in the bid proposal and for each for street and then the utilities. And so we have bid items, and then the contractor bids on those. So what we do is we provide an engineer's estimate. So we think it's around $300, $350. The contractor comes back, and his number that number may vary. So... we have to update these numbers once we do the bid opening.
So we're actually breaking out what would be, what I would consider, building a normal function of the road building and then charging it off of stormwater.
What we do is we break out the bid items for the street, and then we identify the items that are just tied in with the stormwater, and then water and sewer.
Separate schedule, right? Mm-hmm. The contractor's bill.
Okay, so... I think what you're saying, Mark, is all four items are all
yeah. There'll be a bid that includes the roads, water, sewer, storm. That's what the contractors are going to bid. They're going to bid the whole package. Mm-hmm. But for internal cost allocation purposes, we've assumed that so much of the costs are going to go into each one of those categories. When the bid comes in, they'll actually have their schedule of values. Well, they'll show how much the low bid for storm was, how much a low bid for water was and sewer was, okay. And then we'll adjust the cost accounting accordingly.
Yeah, so when they do the work out there, that's all recorded. So we know this work here goes to Schedule A, this work here goes to Schedule B, C, and D. So it's all tracked and recorded.
Councilperson Ingram?
Thank you. My grandfather had a really good expression when I was growing up. He said a lot of people don't use their brains for anything but to keep their ears from slamming together. Is there any way that the city, through Public Works and or Stormwater, can put some pressure on our garbage people to come up with a better design for recycle bins? In the last two events, we had wind, one from the south, one from the northeast, and people up in our neighborhood put their damn recycling bins out, and they literally turn into Frisbees. We had so much trash all over the entire neighborhood. I don't know how much of it went down the storm drains, but I know I sat in my office and watched at least six of these good-sized soda pop bottles just boom, right down the storm drain. I called SSC. Well, that's the only ones we have. They make covered bins. I know they do. We used to have them. Not here, but where we came from. There's no excuse for us not having covered bins up here. With as much wind as we get in the city of Ferndale, and as much trash as was blown around the neighborhood, you saw it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just absolutely horrendous. I mean, literally, those recycled bins were, you know, basically about that high off the ground, and just most. I think there's probably 10 of them down in Freeburg's Field, because nobody would climb over the barbed wire fence to go get them. So, is there any way we can put some kind of pressure, you know, friendly fire or whatever, on the garbage company to say you've got to come up with something better? We get too much wind up here for those perforated boxes.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a comment?
Oh. You have more to say?
Unless there's question, if there's any additional questions?
I'd like to finish up.
For Public Works?
To answer that question, I don't know if that's something we can modify the franchise agreement.
Well, I just made a note. I'm going to give them a call. Maybe they have something, or maybe we can identify what might be considered the higher wind areas of the city. Probably easier to identify the lower wind areas.
Yeah.
But I will say they do get that question from people all the time. There's actually the answers to it on their website, which you won't like, but they do answer that question on their website.
Yeah, they say that's all we got, that's all you get.
It's to cut down on costs for them. I mean, that's what they say on their website. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
finance director.
Yes, sir. Just to summarize, staff recommends the rates and included on page 35. Admittedly, a 40% increase from last year's $10 a month to $14 a month, which we would send out June 30th billings this year, so it's half a year's worth, and then to $15, and then to $16, and then $16.32 cost of living in 2017. I don't think we have ordinances tonight, but I guess I'd like to see a show of hands or at least a nod, and we'll bring back ordinance next time.
Councilperson Hansen, and then Mutchler, and then Goodrich.
The recommendation right now in front of us is 14 instead of 10, and a mid-year adjustment. Less than a month ago, I saw, and I'm sorry, I don't have those now in front of me, but we were talking 12 and maybe going from 12 to 13 to 14 over like 3 or 4 years. Now we're accelerating that. Where did we not anticipate? Where
the CIP grew tremendously.
Why?
For 2014.
I guess that's my question. Why?
Public Works Director, you want to answer that?
Where did we not anticipate?
Replacing the swollen pipe at City Hall.
$150,000.
I think we're showing like $125,000.
Okay.
To include the design, construction, and the inspection. So we added that, and then for Church Road, we're showing $300,000, but based on our most recent estimate, we're a little bit higher than that, so we're showing $350,000. I think we're not really going to know what that number is until we open bids, and then we have to adjust it again.
So we might as well make it 20 now instead of 14, so we can pick up all of these things that we're not going to anticipate over the next four or 5 years.
$750 a year.
Because that's what we're doing. Is we're saying we didn't anticipate it, so now ratepayers, you get to pay it. 40% jump in stormwater today is a huge jump. And there's probably 20 more projects that we could throw on the table that are really good projects that should be done right now.
And what's driving those two projects is that we have another project underway at the library and the parking lot. Because otherwise we wouldn't be moving forward on replacing that pipe right now. We would hold off. And then Church Road, we've been planning for that, for years. We finally have all the funding together. And I just want to make sure that we have enough funding in place to cover the stormwater costs. And so we're showing $300,000, and the estimate was higher. I don't want to be too low on that, because really it's those projects that are driving the increase right now. On some of our other projects, those we're guessing on when that work will move forward. We're trying to stay out ahead of development. And so the way we have the projects laid out, we're guessing on that.
Janice, I understand all of that. I'm probably as sympathetic as anyone is with the need to get projects done. So I'm having a problem. I'm having a problem from the fact that it seems very aggressive. My computer died on me, so I don't have. But we go from 14 to 16 to. And so forth, and it's really frustrating. I haven't gone out and told people that, look, this is going to go to $12, so you need to anticipate that. And it was not going to be this year, was it? It was going to be next year. And then, just a couple, 3 weeks ago, we were looking at 12, and then 14 a couple of years later, and then we had suggested maybe we'd go to 13. To soften the blow to get to 14. And it was like, and all of a sudden we're there. And so now 14, January 1st, 14, 50, 16 a year later. And then COLAs. But I'll bet the COLAs don't stand. What year would it be? 18 or 19, whenever that is, we're anticipating 1732. I won't bet my left arm, but I bet my left pinky that we're not going to be at 1732 when we get out there.
Councilperson Mutchler and Goodrich, and then back to Councilperson Olson.
Yeah, Councilmember Hansen kind of tracking the same way I was. I'll just hand it with the 1732. We have a utility tax that would go on that too, and it's almost $40 for for a two-month bill at that 1732 when you add the utility tax to it. I'm trying, I think it was answered in the discussion about the CIP, but I remember council voted to go from 10 to 12, and then about a year later, we did not enact the 12, we stayed at 10.
Right. We've been at 10 for 3 years.
So, but we voted to go to 12, but then we decided not to go to 12. Kind of help me out, because it seems
sure.
to me, in retrospect,
we cannot continue to just collect cash and hoard cash, and then we had a, I guess, a really great thing on the storm pond. We got loans and grants. So the 12 wasn't needed at that time. We have now a more definitive CIP. This kind of, I've tried all kinds of stair step, 1250, 1350, 1414. It doesn't work. We need money this year.
And then sort of, and I'll just finish with this. And I think I asked this in committee, and I just forgot the answer, is do we have a stormwater impact fee on new development? Do we have some way, a mechanism, because the new homes are adding traffic, they're contributing to this, other than just the fact they have to hook up. Is there, are we adequately getting, using that resource in this thing? I see Jory's nodding. What, help me out here.
I nodded on the first part. I don't know if I can speak to the second part. Is it adequate? We are getting storm fees for new developments.
So a single family.
A connection fee.
A connection,
it's just
fee. Connection fee.
Yeah, I believe the connection fee is like $500. We were talking here just the other day, I think after the Wednesday committee meeting, about the need, now that we have a more long-term capital improvement program for storm, the need to go back and replicate the work we did for streets and water and sewer, where most of you realize that you take the future capital costs and then you kind of roll them backwards to figure out how many new connections you're going to get and therefore what each connection should contribute to cover those
right.
future costs. We need to do that work, and I would be willing to say that chances are that $500 is inadequate given
is that $500 has to be, is that the connection cost to us, or that can that be considered an impact? It's two different things.
It's more of an impact.
Okay, fee. So it could be more.
What we need to do is go through the work, and it probably will be more. One thing I guess I'd like to point out is if you look at the capital, once we get to the out years, the last 3 years, we're right in the $500,000 to $650,000 a year capital improvement. And the advantage to the capital improvement projects is they're one-off. I mean, we won't rebuild church again in our lives, and so we won't have to expend the kind of monies we're talking about on church roads again. But the point was made, we'll probably expend those monies somewhere else. So it's not like the capital needs are going to go away, but they aren't replicated. So the monies that you use 1 year, if you expend them, are available the next year for another project. It might be a situation, and I'm appreciative of the staff going through the capital improvement program, because I think you now have a better idea of how it's broken down between the studies and the street projects and compliance, and each category kind of drives its cost. The big elephant in here are the capital projects. And so maybe it would be appropriate to have the Public Works Committee spend a little time with staff, talk about these capital projects, and see if there aren't some of them that we can just delay a little bit more than we're comfortable delaying as of today. I'm not saying don't do church. We probably need to do church. I'm not saying don't yeah. replace the pipe in City Hall. That needs to be done. But there's probably two tiers of must-do capital projects for 14, 15, and 16, and maybe even the ones that could drop down and be pushed out slightly. So if you're not comfortable with this, I now have a greater appreciation, and I hope you do too, just how much of this is driven by capital projects that aren't going to go away. We're not going to be magically in the year 2020 say, we're done, our stormwater system's perfect, now we just have to maintain it. We're always going to be improving it. But maybe it's a question of just gaining a greater appreciation for the needs as far as what has to be done versus what probably could be pushed out or might be pushed out a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Enable us to ramp up. I think we'll still end up at the $16 and then hopefully with COLA. My hope is that, again, because the capital project roll over, the $16 won't go 17, 18, 19, 20 in those successive years. We'll probably get closer to those numbers eventually. But I think right now what we're seeing is the need to ramp up a certain level of monthly storm fees to cover a certain annual repetitive amount of capital projects. We just need to figure out how to fit 2 pounds into a 1 pound sock, and obviously you can't do that, so we have to figure out what's the most important first.
I'll just finish it real quick. I think the needs are there. I mean, we got to do this. It's just the final bill, and I know we're also considering a rate increase in utilities, possibly from 9 to 10. I'm just looking at the total hit on our customers. It's just that kind of cringy feeling I'm getting here. So
yeah,
we could.
So it's clear from your body language that we're going to refer this back to committee for a robust discussion on this subject. Are there technical questions you wish to ask tonight? And we'll start with Councilperson Goodrich and then go to Councilperson Olson and then Hanson.
I just want to thank staff for all the work that they did. It's amazing how many of you had your fingers in this thing tonight, and I just want to say thank you to all the work that on that. My question was going to be on sending it back to committee. I would assume that it was going to go to Public Works, but I wanted to make sure that it wasn't going to go to Finance or both or whatever. And my question to Finance Director is if we want to get this done for the June billing, is that what you were after? When do we have to have a decision by council to get it in?
It should be done by the first meeting in April.
Okay, so that gives us kind of the time frame to work in. Then.
Mm-hmm. Councilperson Olson was next, then Hanson, then Watson.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's technical, but I'm going to say it anyway. listening to Mel's figures, and what did you say it was 3 weeks ago? You were at 12? So, is that correct?
I can't tell you exactly. A month or so ago.
Okay, yeah. Even a month. Did this $300,000 for Church Road come up within the last month?
$300,000 has been shown on here. I just increased it from $300,000 to $350,000.
Okay, so that we're only talking about $50,000
yeah, actually. $50,000.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then you mentioned something about $100,000. I didn't catch what that was.
Yeah, I think we're showing like $125,000 for the storm pipe. At
okay, I've heard talk about that one for well over a month. So mm-hmm. How did that? All we have extra is $50,000 that we're talking about within the last 4 weeks.
The 50 and then the 125, because the 125 wasn't.
Oh, let me repeat it again.
Okay.
We've been talking about that failing piece of sewer pipe for more than a month.
Mm-hmm.
So why wasn't that in there when we were at 12?
And I'd have to ask Mark. I don't know when we were talking about that, but I don't know when he updated.
I can send you all the iterations, and you can judge what was in there and what wasn't if you study the spreadsheet.
Well, Greg can jump into that one. I mean, we're talking about the City Hall pipe. That's what you're talking about.
Correct.
The City Hall pipe was a study to decide, can we leave it there? That was a heck of a discussion that lasted for 3.5-4 weeks.
Yeah, initially, when we went out to bid for the library, you'll probably appreciate the library sits further towards the water than City Hall does. And so where the storm pipe comes out from underneath the driveway of City Hall, where it exits into the waterway back there, our thought was that we just needed to put a retaining wall, because what is now grass where the pipe comes out is going to be parking and new asphalt. So we're right now 90% of that pipe is currently being driven on, just it's under the parking lot. But there's a good portion of it that is now going to be underneath parking lot that is not under parking lot right now. So we knew we needed to support that pipe, because you can't have the parking in the water. It has to be elevated above the water. So we knew we needed a new retaining wall. But it wasn't until after we had bid the project that they actually got out and looked at that pipe. Because if you remember, the pipe that failed, we kind of chased it in each direction in order to find good pipe, or at least as good a pipe as you can feel comfortable with. And it was discovered subsequent to letting the bid that the amount of good pipe that was left between the where we put the new pipe into it and where the outfall is probably would not stand the weight of garbage trucks and all the other cars and vehicles driving over it. We thought it was in actually a little better shape than what it was before. So this was something that was discovered later on. And you can't replace, well, you can't. What we don't want to do is spend the money to replace the retaining wall only to have the pipe be crushed later. And it's also a little hard to build a wall around a pipe that's full of water. So it makes it a little hard. That's why I think the costs are a little bit higher, is because we had hoped to just put in a wall, but now we have to replace a pipe, and that requires quite a bit of dewatering.
So long story short, we just discovered that and got that price in the last month.
We've been chasing how to do this wall for probably the last 2 months. Probably in the last month did we finally come, or the engineers came to the realization that you're going to put good money after bad if you try to work around that pipe and just concentrate on the wall. Because for a long time we were really kind of fixated on how we were going to get the water out of there in order to literally put the new wall in.
But $150,000 then, or $175,000.
$125,000.
He's adding them together.
Fine, do your math. $50,000 extra.
Oh, you're talking about both
projects. All right.
So we have $175,000 would drive a $2 increase, Mark?
More yes.
Okay. I was, and probably I'm doing what we probably shouldn't do is doing math right here at the table. In 2013, we collected, you can see on the sheet here, $737,000 at a $10 fee. That works out to $61,000 a month. So $61,000 a month on a $10 fee, in my mind, means $6,000 for every buck.
How much?
$6,000 for every dollar, if it's $60,000 for 10.
Per month.
So $6,000 for every dollar is what
per
we collect them per month.
Okay.
So then the $2 wouldn't even cover the $175.
So you can see how it might be 10 to 14, which is 40%, but in fact we're talking about $60,000 increments for each $10. So $6,000 a month, or 60, maybe, what, that'd be what, $72,000 a year for a dollar. So when you have 150 here and 50,000 there, and pretty soon those dollars start piling up on top of each other.
I should know this, but I mean, is Hagen paying the same thing that I'm paying?
No.
It's on square footage.
They're paying the same rate.
Right, same rate,
but it's on square footage.
Based on impervious surfaces.
Even if you have large gravel parking lots. Okay, knowing that it's going to go back to committee to further discussion, Councilperson Hanson?
Technical comment.
There you go.
In reaction to Greg's comment that we're not going to do Church Road again, but looming out on the horizon is the Thornton Overcrossing. I can't fathom what it's going to take in a stormwater fee to pay the stormwater issues around that project. Hang on to your wallet, folks.
Well,
you allocate all of the stormwater costs of that project
to stormwater.
There ain't enough money in this town to do it.
We have to work on getting grants.
I know I'm talking to the DOT folks, and this harkens back to what they're doing right now on a regional basis, trying to put together all the monies. I think Todd Carlson said it the other day. He says, we don't build roads anymore. He says, we build stormwater facilities that happen to have some asphalt around them that people can drive on. Stormwater just is driving street. You know, when they built Church Road, they go, there's a ditch there. Yep, check. There's a ditch on this side of the road. Check. We're good to go. Stormwater's done. And that's how we built roads traditionally. You found a ditch, and you hopefully, you know, work the one at the bottom of the, end of the hill.
Councilperson Watson.
Oh, I'll just wait.
Okay. And Wendy, did you want to have a comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you for the consideration tonight. I know you're frustrated with the rate increases, and so am I. And I just also wanted to share sort of staff's frustration with When I came on in 2009, we got the permit in 2007, and Bob was administrating it, but he was also the public works director, so we didn't have much time to do anything for it. So basically, my task was to start this program and get it up and running, and I don't even know what the fee was then, $3, but I, you know, it's Yeah, I know it seems like a lot of money, and it is, and I have to pay utility rates, too. It's just, you know, when you, I guess I'm asking you to sort of look at it like water and sewer, right? So we started with no program, and now we're building a program, and that costs money. So I just ask that you take that into consideration when you're thinking about this for the next committee meeting. So, thanks.
To be discussed down the road. Rapidly. Okay, next up, discussion on the six-year general fund plan.
That shouldn't take more than another hour.
Yeah. No, it shouldn't take
not
more.
Yet.
I don't think this one's going to be any better.
Good evening, council members and staff and the public.
Long time no see.
Here I am again. the discussion tonight is on the general fund and looking for long-term balancing of said fund. I updated our spreadsheet, our six-year plan, which is called out in our financial policies, to do a six-year look ahead and present to council twice a year, once in July, once in whatever, December, November. I plugged in here the latest fire district bill and also tuned up the fact that we're in 2015, we're no longer getting jail credits that we enjoyed for 8 years, between 70 and 80 grand. So in your packet on page 37 shows, it's actually page 38, shows a 2015 deficit of $166,000 in the general fund. Again, driven mostly by two items, the jail credits going to zero and this big fire district bill. So that basically, if you look at page 38 and extend it out without any change in programming, no new staff, we already have the detective plan for mid-year this year. No new capital, no new people, reasonable 3% inflation, even for the fire district. We run out of money in 2020. We declare bankruptcy, we cede to the county, we all go home set for me because they need an accountant for at least 2 years. The police may have to change the ground uniforms. I don't know. Anyway, we'll probably keep our water, sewer, storm system. But now, we won't let that, and you won't let that happen, to go bankrupt in 2020. So page 39 in your packet has some suggestions. We first want to look at cutting costs, obviously. In the budget book online shows a history of headcount. And in 2009, we took drastic reductions in the general fund headcount. Two fewer support staff for police, two fewer city hall finance staff, planning, building took a hit, all over. I don't see any way to cut any fat out of the personnel for general fund. I just don't see it. We've made some good non-labor cuts. Sam cut over 100 grand on our casualty insurance. Way to go, Sam. We had a one-time windfall of 0% increase on our health insurance. Now, that's not going to continue. Planning a 3% overall cost increase, and we have union contracts and non-union contracts as well. So on the cost side, I think we've hammered the hell. We'll keep looking at the cost side, but I don't see any giant savings in personnel in general. There are some potential revenue options on page 39. We have bank capacity property tax, 61 grand. Solid waste tax increase, currently at 12.5%. And I'm happy to report that two transfer stations picked up the 12.5% and sent us money in February based on January's 12.5%. They're on board. Excellent. So each 1% increase in solid waste gets you about 114 grand. And then thirdly, utility tax increase on City of Ferndale utilities, a 1 percentage point increase from 9 to 10 percentage points would bring 51.5. So just plugging those scenarios in, page 41 and 42, Page 41 shows those three increases projected for 2015 gets us to balance. It gets us to balance in 2015 and on. Alternatively, the Finance Committee asked me to run a scenario with the only revenue increase being solid waste tax, staggering those rates from the current 12.5 to staggering out over several years. And the way that had to work, after several scenarios, trying for a nice gradual increase, but coming up with 12.5 currently and going to 14, 14.5, 15 in 2017. A previous commitment that we reviewed last November in terms of affording the new detective, the solid waste would have to go up half a point in 2016 to sustain that detective. That's old news. So this last scenario on page 38, it just brings, let's see, the final version is, going to 43. 43 is where we just bunked in that those rate increases for solid waste only. We didn't change property tax, except the 1% assumption. We didn't change utility tax. We just bumped up solid waste tax, which would terminate now in a projected 15.5% by 2017. 12.5 to 15.5. Page 44, that balances the budget all because of solid waste tax. So there's a couple scenarios. Councilmember Goodrich said, why do we have to wring our hands every October, November, December, try to make this thing balance? Here's an opportunity to make it balance now if you adopt those rates. And now things do change, but no new growth in personnel, no new capital items, no new police cars except for grants. This kind of makes it to solve it. So I guess I'd entertain questions. I know we want to review this and not have to wring our hands in November and try to come up with some scheme to make it balance.
Councilperson Olson?
Do all employee payroll come out of general fund?
No. Payroll is spread over all funds, water, sewer, storm, equipment funds, street fund. Some employees are dedicated to general fund, like all the police, the two parks workers, plus parts of all the other 11 folks that work in our crew that work on parks. Every payroll, we charge those rates and those hours to the fund that they worked on. Planning and building staff, all general fund. Most of finance, general fund. Y'all's stipend is general fund. So it's spread all over. And we really look at that accurately every payday, entering those timesheets.
Councilperson Goodrich?
The mayor can probably attest to this as well as a lot of us personally with the medical increase, insurance increases that a lot of us hit, businesses are hitting, some of this year, some next year. Any idea, I mean, you put in 3% for medical, do you think that that's a realistic thing, or have you heard from our carrier that it may be more like some of the bigger increases that businesses have been hit with?
We won't, unfortunately, really know that better until the October-November time frame, usually each year. They hope that, if you recall, that we adopted going into the self-insurance pool that they went into. So AWC's Benefit Trust is now self-insured. You jumped on that bandwagon, and that's actually why we got that 0% increase this next year. That was a severe cost savings because it allowed them to avoid some taxes, state and federal taxes. When I spoke to them right before we adopted that, they hoped that that would severely blunt future increases, but they're still coming. A major issue, a major, major issue that we're facing right now is that the plan that approximately 75% of our employees are on right now, the Regions Health First plan, by 2018 is going to cost so much that it will qualify for the Cadillac tax, which means we would then have to pay a penalty of approximately $1,400 per employee annually to keep them on that. AWC still need to continue to work to address what that means. My guesstimate is that they're simply going to get rid of that plan, so our employees won't even have the option to have that plan. And that's not the first time they've done this. The Health First plan, it was an iteration. They had a plan before that, and it started getting too expensive, so they switched to Health First. So those regions plans especially are considered Cadillac plans, and they're going by the wayside due to the new law. But that doesn't mean that costs aren't going to increase. They just think that by being self-insured, to get back to your main question, it will hopefully blunt those increases before. Now, remember, we were seeing double-digit rate increases to our health insurance every single year for 4 years. This is the first year in 4 years that we haven't seen an increase. So it's not that we probably aren't going to see increases in the future, but hopefully we aren't going to see a double-digit rate increase for a few years.
Councilperson Ingram?
Well, we had this discussion, obviously, at the Finance Committee meeting. And I'm going to reiterate basically what I said there. I'm not willing to take any bank capacity and put any more load on our homeowners. You know the school district's coming back at us again. That's going to cost us. We're going to probably, hopefully, within the next 2 years, go out to the voters for a general obligation bond to do the Thornton overcrossing. That's going to impact our homeowners. So because we have heard basically from the transfer stations that they don't care what our tax is, it just flows right through them, and by our, what is it, Mark? It's not a contract, it's a...
Our franchise.
Franchise, thank you. Because with our franchise with them, it doesn't cost the citizens of Ferndale anything when we increase those rates. I'm going to make a motion that we raise the solid waste tax to, what do we start out with, 14?
Just clarify. Yeah, it go to 14. Sorry, they go to 14 in 2015.
Yep. That, okay. And now I will make that as a motion. We go to 14% in 2015 and balance the budget. Not have to wring our hands in November.
I'd like to. Is there a second to that? I'd like the record to reflect that that isn't what the disposal companies. I have never heard them say they did not care where it went to. They may absorb it. They may pass it on. They have not shared with me that they didn't really care.
They didn't say they would have a problem with these increases. They did say that.
Yes. Okay. Councilperson Olson, and then Councilperson Mutchler is after that, and then Councilperson Hansen.
It's not that I didn't support that. I think you should go back to the finance and let them talk about it some more. I'm more apt to, I agree with Paul, I don't like taking our bank capacity. That's basically a savings account when the world ends. Utility tax increases. Solid waste, though, Bellingham has their retail, we have trash. You know, that's what it boils down to. We all can bitch about all of our tax money going to Bellingham for our sales tax, but we don't have that option, so what we do have is trash. And like you said, it doesn't apply to those people in town, but it applies to everybody else. So I would be more apt to support what you're asking for in solid waste.
Councilperson Mutchler was next.
Yeah, I just wanted Councilmember Ingram to know I'm interested in that particular direction. I'm not ready to make any decision tonight. You're not going to be surprised for me. I don't want to pass that 9% on the utility. I just find that especially a struggle. I'd like us to have time on this a bit. I'm also looking at some cost-cutting ideas that maybe we can look at in committee. This is a big one. This is a large amount of money. We have to find it. We'll find the cuts. So something I think we can do tonight.
Before I go to Councilperson Hansen, the clerk just to be clear,
that might have been the motion, but we couldn't actually increase the solid waste tax this evening. We'd have to go through some process. We'd actually have to bring you an ordinance that shows that increase. So maybe it would be, you know, directing staff to bring back such an ordinance. But what we could do now is bring that ordinance to the Finance Administration Committee without a motion, let's say.
Councilperson Hansen and then Goodrich.
Anybody know when the franchise agreement ends?
2018.
So in 2018, they're going to nail us to the wall.
Well, they've extended the franchise twice in a row now.
Okay.
5 years at a time. 5 or 10 years at a time? 5 years at a time. Yeah.
Past performance is no guarantee of future performance.
True. But we have increased solid waste that
prospective
time.
Yes.
And no one ever dare talk about the big elephant. If one of those people were to move just a few feet and be in the county, or out on the lummy?
Get permits.
Well, they don't. Permits, they get them from the tribe.
They would need it at the lummy.
And then, what are we collecting? About $1.2 million?
Correct.
Okay, and half of that would fall away. You want to talk about bankruptcy.
So, volunteer fire department.
I'm not trying to
good
predict what might happen, but you keep squeezing those situations. And I agree with you, Gary. I serve on another committee with the owner of RDC, and I'll guarantee you he's not happy with the fact that he has to write that check once a month. And mostly what he's not happy with is the fact that Ferndale residents don't have to pay it because of the franchise agreement.
Councilor Goodrich?
I just want to bring out the point that we don't have to do this tonight or in the next couple of weeks. The reason I kind of brought this up is I just didn't want it to hit in October or November, us having this discussion. So I would just urge the Finance Committee not to rush into this, to make sure that we look at all of the options and things before we do enact anything, because we're not under a gun to have to do this month or next month. We do have some time to look at this, and this may be the best way to go. I don't know at this point in time, but I think we at least we started the discussion, and I appreciate Finance Director and stuff working on this.
Thank you,
Council.
Let's
see where it takes it.
Increase the solid waste tax to 20% and let them keep their horrible recycling bins. Then we're all happy.
Nope.
Who hired this guy?
I'm an idea man. Sorry, too into the next.
Okay, moving on from that. Councilperson Mutchler.
Mark, page 43 was the solid waste version of this scenario. I was just trying to...
43, yes.
And the last page.
Yeah, 43 is a solid waste exclusive.
Yeah. Okay, and we're on, which line is it that's got the actual solid waste?
It's where it's real dark.
62. The green.
Oh, yeah, the bottom.
Color version. That didn't do so well, black and white. So
okay.
Okay.
The one I did. The one that you can't read.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
And so if you don't mind, real quick, give me the percentages each year that they've written.
Yeah, I can give those to you. They're on page 43. Let me give them to you. It says transfer of solid waste from 12.5% for 2014. That's what it currently is. You go to 14% in 2015.
I don't care about that.
14.5% in 2016. 15% in 2017. But I have to caution that the 15 really is 15.5% because we already said we need half a point for continued funding for the detective. So it terminates at 15.5% in 2017.
So it kind of jumps one full point from 14.5 to 15.5.
Just to make the cash balance
yeah,
be positive
yeah.
You know, each year.
Thank you, Mr. Pearson.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next up on the agenda, I'll go to the Community Development Director to announce item G.
Is there anybody, any of the students?
Yep. Are you a high school student? We're going to sign you off so you can...
We typically let you go by... Do you want to go anywhere? Yeah. You can be excused. They typically excuse us.
I bet they want to do
this. Would you like to be excused?
Come on. Can I be excused? It's so unfair.
You said you said four.
I know. I was like,
Next
you know, sir.
There you go.
interesting. And why people go?
Rave review. Kind of interesting.
Was it a bunch of old people talking about porn?
We haven't seen the review sheet yet.
Okay, moving on to item number G.
City staff recommend that City of Ferndale adopt an emergency six-month moratorium on the acceptance of applications involved in the cultivation, processing, and retail sale of marijuana. I will briefly explain to you why it is that we are proposing this and what the effect would be. I have one word on my notes here, and that is consistent. Over the last 6 months, as we started the discussion on I-502 retail marijuana, I think the staff has consistently sought to be compliant with Initiative 502 and the Liquor Control Board's regulations. Over the last 10 days or so, it has come to our attention that the Liquor Control Board is now allowing applicants who applied prior to the deadline of December 20th, 2013, who now find themselves in areas where jurisdictions have adopted moratoriums or bans, to reapply in areas that do not have such moratoriums and bans. The effect of that is unclear at this time, and that's one of the reasons, one of the primary reasons why staff is recommending a moratorium. We have been able to, from my perspective, answer most of council's concerns up to this point and tell you here are the likely impacts of these decisions or these rules. I am not sure what the Liquor Control Board's rules are right now, and I am not sure that the Liquor Control Board has consistent measurements for those rules. And until we do know, we don't know what the impact of these changes are going to be on the City of Ferndale. What we're proposing is an immediate moratorium. If we have four votes tonight, then it would go into effect immediately. It would only apply to those applications that are received or would have been received by the Liquor Control Board after December 20th, 2013. So this would continue to vest the applicants that had applied prior to that December 20th deadline. Again, consistent with our policy.
And who are moving locations?
And
who are not?
Moratorium would only would apply to
those folks who had applied prior to December 20th, 2013, who are in the proposed location, if that proposed location had not changed. So we are looking at the same people in the same location as of December 20th. Happy to answer any questions. There are a lot of whereas statements, but that's it. In a nutshell, there is no public hearing.
Councilperson Olson.
First of all, I'd like to congratulate you on finally coming around to the right way of thinking. And I won't say I told you so.
I can't hear you because I think you have a cold.
Yeah, I think. How are we going to be able to check, Sam, if the state, if somebody's coming from another location?
Great question. Thank you. I actually made a public records request to the State Liquor Control Board for the list of applicants as it should have been on December 20th, 2013. And so we got that list last week. I culled it down to just the Ferndale ones that were in place at the time. And we actually had the opportunity to already use that list today because in came the mayor with an application for someone who's trying to move from Whatcom County, where they have a moratorium, into Ferndale. They have not come into the City of Ferndale yet, however, for any permits. And so this moratorium is going to impact that applicant.
And as a side, there have been no submittals over the last 10 days. So we are consistent with the December 20th. There are no new vesting that have occurred.
Okay. With that, this doesn't have a number. Do you have a...
Oh, it doesn't have an ordinance
just
number yet.
Just move approval of the staff recommended ordinance.
I'd like to make a motion that we move the moratorium on the marijuana business emergency moratorium as staff recommends.
Second. Okay, move and second it. Further discussion? Councilperson Mutchler's first, then Goodrich.
Obviously, I support this. I'm just extremely impressed with how staff managed this whole thing over the last few days. I know that was a balancing act of, just say it was a balancing act of priorities and communication and navigating through some difficult areas, and it sounds like you dodged a bullet. With what the mayor just said, so I'm very impressed with how you handled this very professionally, and of course, it has my support.
Councilperson Goodrich?
Um,
refresh, maybe I missed it, or how long is this going to be for? And
6 months.
How are we going to know at the end of 6 months if we need to extend it, or can we extend it, or what's going to be the criteria to lift it?
I'm sure staff will have conversations with you before that time.
Certainly, and we do need to have a public hearing within the next 60 days. As part of that, that will frame a little bit of the discussion of what it would take to resolve these issues. And at that point, after that 6 months period, if not before, then we could determine which way to go.
But also to add to that, I mean, we confirmed this new action was occurring with the Liquor Control Board. Yori and Haley both spoke to them, and from what I understand, not necessarily the most pleasant experiences, unfortunately. But we will continue to talk to them. Absolutely. And continue to clarify what their position is and where they're moving in this arena. So that's going to be a big part of it, is getting good communication from the state.
And we will certainly indicate to them that there, if that is adopted, there is a moratorium in the city of Ferndale, and possibly we won't be the only one jurisdictions that do that in light of this new information.
Councilperson Olson?
Yori, can we also look at, since there is no state preemption on these, correct? As there is in banning firearms in parks, for example. There was a thing on Cairo News about unanticipated things of more or less it's unlicensed security guards coming back from Iraq who are armed and protecting these places. And I just want to make sure that we need to add in those sort of protections, because being nothing against veterans, but it's different than policemen. You just don't get to deal with what they get to deal with. So I want to make sure that we don't have that sort of aspect running around in these things. So can we add that into the big look?
It's separate from the moratorium action itself, but as we go through,
it would go under administrative control.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Our clerk wants to add some new information.
I wanted to make one thing clear. The state has been very aggressive and pretty adamant the whole time that regardless of what the local regulations are, even when we had the current ordinance we have in place that regulates these businesses, regardless of that or a ban or a moratorium, they've consistently publicly stated that they will issue licenses if someone complies with their rules, while also saying that those licensees are supposed to comply with local regulations. So while we are putting in a moratorium, it doesn't necessarily mean they won't issue someone a license, a state license. And so I just want to make sure no one's caught off guard if that were to occur. So.
But they do need a local license,
approval. This could mean is we could end up in a court process being challenged by an applicant. And that's just the reality of it, but this is what we feel needs to occur at this point. So.
Okay, further discussion. There is a motion and a second before you. I see no further discussion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed. Motion carries 7-0.
Thank you.
Well done, Council. Okay, moving on. Mayor reports. There are no mayor reports. Council reports. Councilperson Hansen and then Watson.
I attended the Parks, Recs, and Trails meeting last Thursday, and the discussion was at least an hour and a half long regarding the Metropolitan Parks District. They actually... Some of the members acted as though they had never heard of the Metropolitan Parks District. There were 1,000 questions, some of which were, good questions, some of which weren't so good. The gist of the meeting was they would like to work on setting up how the council proceeds from this point forward. In other words, I'm going to throw one unknown out there. One of the unknowns is, what about the current city parks? Are they going to become part of the district? Some of them become part of the district. None of them become part of the district. Those kinds of questions, there's not even a recommendation yet. And they would like to take this under consideration. the dilemma is we've already given Sam a directive to formulate the, from the administrative point of view, a Metropolitan Parks timeline, calendar, if you will, and prepare to get a ballot measure up. And right now we don't have support from our Parks, Recs, and Trails group as a body. So I'm going to move right now to suspend the work of the clerk on the Metropolitan Parks District and refer the whole project back to the Parks, Recs, and Trails Committee.
I second that.
Been moved and seconded. Further discussion?
I just want to add that really quick. Councilmember Hansen did speak with me about this, and we were going to do this next meeting, but we don't need to really wait. This actually allows us to bring it to the Parks Board as fast as possible. One thing we're also going to have the PERTAB talk about is, do we need to go with the Parks District, or do we need to just go with the Greenways Levy? And that will be something that the Parks Board hopefully will have a robust conversation about and then make a recommendation back to Council. So this is a really good direction, and I think pretty much everyone's on board with that, but we need more time.
All in favor, signify by saying aye. Oh, one more question? Excuse me.
Wasn't this Rob Nordhaus's idea? Or whose idea was this to begin with?
They want the school board. They don't want the city limits. They want school board limits. They don't want city.
I think they felt like the
school district boundaries.
We didn't
school
necessarily district communicate well what their recommendation might have been. And I think their issue was they didn't feel like they actually made an official recommendation. We knew what their recommendation was going to be, but they didn't take a vote. And that upset them a little bit. And I think that's fair. You know, honestly, the direction given to me, I was just going to bring it directly back to council. The proper step is we should bring it back to PERTAB because through city code, they've been the ones that are supposed to make recommendations on this stuff to you guys. So
I was kind of confused there because I thought that was him speaking on behalf of them.
Yeah.
I don't think that they are in opposition to a Metropolitan Parks District of some form. I think they want to have more things answered before this goes out to a public vote, and that they put their name behind it to support it, because, you know, it's going to be a tough nut to get out there and get past. And they kept asking the questions, and they asked the questions of Gary, Kathy, and I sitting there. Well, is Pioneer Park going to be included? We don't know. Well, how much is it going to be? Well, we only know about this and this, but we don't know exactly. And it's like, how can you take that out, and go to the public without having a lot of those answers in hand? So that's where it's coming from. You're going to get from them a more complete package. It's probably not going to happen in 2014, but you're going to get a more complete package with a lot of those questions answered and their recommendation to you.
Thank you. They basically look at, they're focusing on 2015. So they want to do a long-term look at this and put a lot of time in it. And I think the Ferndale community has proven that the voters are pretty intelligent, and you better have lots of answers to pass a vote in Ferndale. Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay. 6-1 with Councilperson Watson in opposition. Okay, further council reports. Councilperson Watson?
Are we doing council reports, not
yes.
Surprise other things? Good.
Council report.
Sure, whatever. The Ferndale Senior Center is having a magic show and ice cream social to raise money for Meals on Wheels. It's this Saturday from 2 to 4. Tickets are $5 for adults. I think it's $4 for kids, and so you can come and they'll have a magic show for about an hour, and then they'll have a big old ice cream bar set up for the kids, so they can meet a magician from 2 to 4 on Saturday at the Senior Center.
Okay,
yeah.
2 to 4 this Saturday?
This Saturday at the Senior,
at the Senior Center.
Yes, and it raises money for the local Meals on Wheels.
Do we know the magician?
Oh, it's on their website. I can't remember his name. But go to the website.
Okay, great. Any other council reports? No, seeing none. Okay, going to department reports. Finance director?
Nothing.
City administrator?
Nothing.
Clerk?
Go up.
Okay. Public works?
Nothing.
Police?
He's so mean.
Okay, great. Oh, no, that's not everyone. Okay, planning?
March 11th, the county council is having a public hearing on their population and growth allocations. Their committee recommended approval of our allocations.
Thank you.
Being there on March 11th is probably going to be a good idea. It's probably going to be at 11 p.m. And it starts at 7.
I entertain a motion to adjourn.
Adjourn.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.